This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Time to put on the show.
Pass rush is the biggest problem for Seattle. It's got to be the biggest priority this offseason. And for all the time we talked about putting them in a better position, making it easier for them to rush the passer, playing to the strengths. You know what? Here's another thing. Make the pass rush better. And that's going to pose a problem, Paul, because their best pass rusher, and maybe their top two pass rushers, if you consider Jaron Reed number two, are going to be free agents.
With Jaron Reed, we'll see. I'm skeptical. And honestly, I don't know that it necessarily should be that much of a priority. But Jadeveon Clowney needs to be back here. If the Seahawks don't have Clowney next season, they are taking a big step back on defense. And guess what? The defense was pretty close to walking backwards off a ledge last year.
I think you're saying what most Seahawks fans and what most people here at the station feel, which is that he's a priority, and it's hard to envision them getting better without bringing back Clowney, which is what made this interesting. Brady Henderson of ESPN.com, who is 710 ESPN Seattle alumnus. We take unnecessary pride in Brady.
Old Hendo, right?
Hendo's not going to happen.
Oh, it's going to happen.
He is graduated. He's moved along, but we like to kind of think of him way back when. He made a prediction, and I'll say this, the logic he used is pretty sound. It's a prediction. It might be right, it might be wrong, but the logic he used is pretty sound in saying why he doesn't think he predicts the Seahawks will not resign Jadeveon Clowney. Here's what he told us this morning.
He's going to get the free agency, and as we all know, when guys get there, the price has the potential to skyrocket when every team can bid on him. And, I think even though he's coming off a season where he only had two sacks, he's still got a ton of pressure. He's still a marquee name. And I think that, if he commands, something in the neighborhood of what Khalil Mack got a couple years ago, then if you're the Seahawks, you have to say, okay, yeah, we need this guy, but we also need more, because you saw that their pass rush was pretty ineffective with him. And so if it's just him, that's not going to be enough. And if he, gets that top of the market deal, are you going to have enough to get somebody else?
Brady went on to predict and say, we'll play the whole interview at 7:30. We talked to him this morning. He's on his way to Columbia. So it's lucky we got him before he got out of the country. Before we get to whether or not that would be a mistake, let's outline exactly the logic that he's using, because I think that part is pretty sound, which is that Seattle, which last year passed on giving Frank Clark a top of the market contract, they said, you know what, $20 million, it's too rich for our blood. We'll pay you 1 year at the franchise tag, and then we'll revisit this again next year. And if you can get $21 million from someone else, God bless you. And then we'll talk to them about a trade. And absolute, but we're not going to go that high. Would they go that high this year for Jadeveon Clowney? And his rationale for why they wouldn't is that if they did that, they're not going to have enough room to add someone else. That would be their pass rush budget, essentially. And they're going to look at the situation and say, hey, we'll take the route the Green Bay Packers did when they signed Preston Smith and Za'Darius Smith. That, yes, we'd like to have Clowney, but given a choice between one pass rusher and Jadeveon Clowney and getting two guys kind of that caliber, we're going to go and get the two guys.
It's a tricky situation, though, because you don't know that the two guys are going to come in and be what Za'Darius and Preston Smith were for the Green Bay Packers. You could end up bringing in, say, for example, you bring in Yannick Ngakoue and Matthew Judon. What if one of those guys only works out? What if neither of those guys work out? You know Jadeveon Clowney is going to work out if you bring him back. The question I have, Danny, is what's his perspective and how much money is it going to take for him to go away from what he had said when the season ended and what he showed to the Houston Texans this offseason by basically enforcing a somewhat no-trade clause while the Texans were trying to figure out if they could franchise tag him or not. He essentially refused a trade to the Miami Dolphins.
Yep.
How much money is it going to take to change his mind on that front? That's a question only he can answer. We had Michael Bumpus in studio yesterday, and he said if he was put in a situation where he could be playing for a contender or getting that money, it sounded like he said he would take the money. And I think a lot of players would. I think there always is a price that you can go over. I just wonder what price is it going to take to get to that. And I think the Seahawks are in a pretty good spot because there aren't a lot of contenders that are going to be able to throw a huge bag at him.
Now, that part is right. In terms of the teams with salary cap space, Seattle is the one team that would point to the best quarterback situation. Seattle has the best combination of quarterback and salary cap space.
Correct.
Of any team in the league. They have the best. If you take those two factors, there's other teams that have more space. They all have worse quarterbacks. I don't know if anybody other than Kansas City has a better quarterback, but none of those other really good teams. San Francisco doesn't have cap space. The Rams don't have cap space. But let's get past that and ask this question. How important should Seattle overspend for Jadeveon Clowney?
I think so, because you know what you're getting. And sometimes it makes sense to overpay for something you know you're getting. I'll bring this up too when it comes to trading draft picks. If you got a first-round pick, will you want to keep the first-round pick, which people overvalue the bleep out of for reasons I can't understand? It's a draft pick. It's essentially a lottery ticket. Or would you rather have a known commodity in the NFL that maybe isn't like some all-game-changing player, but he's still a consistent player that you've seen perform? You want the guy that you know performs. And I think that with Clowney, it is definitely worth it to overspend, because with Clowney, you can build a defense around that guy.
He only had 2 sacks last year.
I mean, how much importance are we going to put into sacks when the game film screams this guy is a absolute force to be reckoned with, when we know at the beginning of the year they were trying to figure out how to work him into the system, essentially, and at the end of the year, after that amazing game against the 49ers, I mean, he's dealing with the Danny O'Neill special hernia.
No. Like, let's not compare it. Like, his actually impacted athletic performance. Mine just made my intestines bulge out of the right side of my groin, inguinal hernia, which has been fixed.
Danny, you need that to stay on the inside.
Yeah, no, that's why I got patched. They got a plug and patch on me. I agree with you, except there's this, it's a devil's advocate, or maybe it's just looking at it. It was 2 sacks, and it was a bad defense, and you're paying top shelf. If you have to pay a Khalil Mack contract to keep him, do you do it? And I think that that's something that the Seahawks are going to wrestle long and hard with. And the question of whether they should, that's not been their tendency. When they've had a guy, they'll meet that sort of top-tier Bobby Wagner, Russell Wilson. I'm not sure if Clowney, do you put Clowney in that he is the absolute best pass rusher in the league? He should get Khalil Mack's contract.
Well, that's the thing. He's not a pass rusher. He's an everything. And I think that's what you have to tell yourself when you're giving him a contract like that. Now, I'd ask, you've covered the team for a long time. The other situations that they've found themselves in where they could give big-time contracts to players who really performed, would it have made sense for any of those? Because it seemed like they were taking flyers on a lot of guys. They came in, they performed, and then after a certain point, like, say, Michael Bennett, there was a shelf life and they moved on. With Frank Clark, you could see why maybe there was a shelf life there, because the Frank Clark show is only beginning, and in the wake of this Super Bowl championship that he just brought home to Kansas City. I wonder, how would Clowney compare to the past? And does he feel different? Because to me, outside looking in, he does feel different.
Each of the Seahawks guys, when they've extended them, the guys that have been at the top of their position grade have been clearly and unambiguously one of the top 2 or 3 guys at their position. In Russell's case, it would be for his age group. But Russell Wilson, Earl Thomas, Richard Sherman, Bobby Wagner, like, all of those guys got top-tier extensions, and they got top position. Hey, we're going to pay you right in line with the top 2 or 3 guys. Like, you're right there at the top of your pay grade. You're going to get a year shorter contract, which we're going to sell to you as, hey, you get to get back to the market quicker, but you're absolutely going to be up there. We're not going to cheap out on any of that. Cam Chancellor also got a top-tier deal. That was a little surprising to us, because it turns out that Cam was better than we expected. Cam was better, and I think the team felt he was better. When they resigned him, we're like, oh, I thought that was kind of a cog rather than a main part, and it was a main part. The difference with Clowney is, I would say, is Clowney one of the top 2 or 3 pass rushers in the NFL?
Pass rushers, no.
Is he one of the top 2 or 3 edge players in the NFL? Because now you're throwing him at Khalil Mack, and those are, he's going to get and ask for Khalil Mack, Aaron Donald type money. And because he's an unrestricted free agent, the possibility, players like Jadeveon Clowney don't get to free agency. That's why he had to work so hard to get here. That's why he had to hold out. That's why he had, and he's gotten to where everybody's going to be able to throw money at him. It's a great situation for him, and he's going to have to calibrate how much, what's the size of the salary compared to the contention chances. Like, how do I calibrate those? For Seattle, it's got to be like, is he so good that we compromise our ability to add other pieces? It's a fascinating, and it's an interesting two-sided discussion.
You would compromise your ability to add other
pieces.
Yes. But you don't know what those pieces are
yep,
going to bring
you're right,
for you.
100% right.
And that's why I'm all in. And I have been for a while, and I'm a little biased, I'll admit it. I've been covering this guy his whole career, but I know what he is. I know what he's always been, and I know, barring injury, what he will continue to be for a long time. I don't know what these other options are going to bring you here.
It's Danny and Gallant. We are going to play that whole interview with Brady Henderson. We caught him on the way out of the country. So that's the only place you're going to see it here. Brady Henderson. His name is not Hendo, Paul.
Hendo.
And we're going to...
Our guy.
And now that's at 7:30. Right now it's time to tell you what to watch for.
What to watch for every morning at 7:10. Brought to you by Dubin Law Group. The first look at the stories worth watching today with Danny and Gallant.
Yesterday, we saw the Kansas City Chiefs have their victory parade. It was a sight to be seen, wasn't it? Do you remember what you saw out there? You saw a little Travis Kelce who was trying to drink some beer off of a Lombardi trophy. I'm not really sure.
Can you not do that?
You can't.
It's a Stanley Cup thing, right?
Right. It's a Stanley Cup thing. He was trying a little bit too hard. He's really trying to make, as Lydia pointed out on the Blitz, you got to fight for your right to party a thing. Good luck with that. And we also got to hear from Patrick Mahomes. I really enjoyed hearing Patrick Mahomes trying to speak, and, well, his voice is seeming to go all of a sudden, but you know what? He's starting to sound a little Ed Orgeron-y, and I like it. He's getting a little gruffness to his voice.
It's surreal. It really is. It's an awesome feeling. I couldn't even imagine this whenever I sent that tweet out, and so be able to be a Super Bowl champion at Disney World, it's one of the best feelings of my entire life.
How about a little Travis Kelce?
21 years. How about that? I'm going to walk this wall. How about 21 years? Y'all know what that means? Everybody here is thinking, oh, that's when I can, you know what I mean, legally get a drink. Yeah. No, 21 years. That's how long it's just been turning for my guy Andy Reid. It's just been turning and turning and turning.
Okay. Yeah.
And what we
put
do,
him in jail.
What we do,
lock him up.
We unleash a can of whoop to everybody.
Are you auditioning for the WWE? Like, calm down.
We know that Paul doesn't like Kelce. Lydia, you're an unbiased, impartial judge. You generally look on the sunshiny
yeah.
side of things. What do you think of that?
Just stop trying to make fight for your right happen. Stop trying to make fetch happen, and then we won't have a problem. It belongs to the Beastie Boys, and that's it.
My mom was so mad at me. I was in fifth grade, and I just remember her looking at me, and she goes, "It is not your right to party." I was like, what the hell are you talking about? 13 years old.
Gotta fight, though. Gotta fight for your right. But yes, please, Travis, give it up. Give it up.
What to watch for.
Seattle Sports Star of the Year banquet is tonight, which is going to be very exciting.
Let's go. I'm going.
Paul is going to be suited and booted. Jessamyn McIntyre is going to be there, microphone in hand. Have you got to meet Rollo yet?
Only over the phone. I'm excited to meet him in person. Max Borghi's up for Male Athlete of the Year, too.
Male Athlete of the Year.
For some reason, I don't think he likes that.
Oh, really? No way.
Well,
he's a chef?
Wait, he's Italian. Viva Italia!
Is that different?
It's a Max Borghi.
Swedish.
All right, let's keep going. Let's move on.
Male Athlete of the Year, Borghi, who is Italian, is a candidate. Also, Tyler Lockett.
Matisse Thybulle.
Rui Hachimura. A lot of good candidates that'll be there.
Diaz?
Yeah. Raul Ruiz Diaz! He's a little guy from Peru.
Okay.
Yeah, plays for the Seattle Sounders.
Gotcha.
It's a fun event. Looking forward to it. Seattle Sports Star of the Year banquet.
Shout out Angie Mentink, who will be presented with the Keith Jackson Award.
Is Angie Mentink the most universally beloved member of Seattle sports media?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sorry, Brock, but yeah. Angie. I can't even...
Angie's way cooler than Brock.
Yeah,
you would say
there's
that.
Brock's in the B tier, but I can't see anyone standing next to Angie.
I would think less of someone who didn't like Angie Mentink. And I think most other people, including someone who liked me, I would look like there's some problems with that guy. Like, you can't be universally.
I think
Angie Mentink,
the guy who she charged on the mound loves her too. Like, everybody loves her.
What to watch for.
Oh, buddy. James Paxton is dealing with another injury. He's going to be out 3 to 4 months with a back injury. He's going to be a free agent. And while Justice Sheffield was underwhelming last year for the Mariners, that was a pretty good trade, huh?
It was. This is a hard one because when there's someone you really like, which is the case with James Paxton, James Paxton is a great guy. And he tries and he works really hard. And this isn't a fact of someone who doesn't take care of himself. He just tends to get hurt. It just happens. He tends to get hurt. He got hurt in a conditioning drill. So when your team trades a guy like that, and then you watch him get hurt elsewhere, there's this strange mix of like, my team made the right value calculation, on this injury-prone player. But you feel bad for... I mean, Paxton's going to be a free agent. He's out 3 to 4 months with back surgery. I feel terrible for him. But I also feel that Seattle got out while the getting was good. I feel terrible for saying that, Paul.
Well, it makes sense, though, right? Because given what their strategy is right now, which I know is frustrating to a lot of people, they are not going with a, hey, let's bring in a guy who we know is good. And especially when the guy's got injury issues, I mean, don't you want to be able to trot out as many young pitchers as you possibly can?
And that's why it was a good trade.
Right.
Yeah. It was, but I feel bad James is hurt. I'm just trying to be honest about being conflicted about the whole thing, Paul.
It was really cool that one time when an eagle landed on him.
Yeah! Dude, he was so composed. I would have been freaked out.
Yeah, I would have too.
Plus, he
just
was Canadian.
Kind of a slight shoulder dip, that's all. Oh,
plus,
okay.
He's Canadian, and it was our national bird. That could have been an international incident.
It could have.
There's a scenario where that could have led to, like, global conflict between us and Canada.
Right. Classic Canadian being polite to an eagle attacking him.
Dude, that was impressive. That is what to watch for. I once saw an eagle, bald eagle, that was in captivity in France. I felt like we were trying to be humiliated. I thought we should have broken it out.
Yeah, yes, we should have broken it out.
It's time for the Morning Drive with John Clayton.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Danny and Gallant.
It's a four-way battle, and there's only going to be three spots. Somebody has to go.
The first and final word on everything NFL from the professor, John Clayton.
Presented by Infinity of Tacoma at 5.
They scored 30 points a game. They're the best running team in football.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Danny and Gallant.
Professor, what's happening?
Hey, how we doing?
We're doing pretty well. We talked to Brady Henderson this morning, and he had an interesting prediction that he made. It's a prediction where he thought that ultimately the price of Jadeveon Clowney is going to be too high for Seattle's taste, and they're going to choose to try and add multiple pass rushers like Green Bay did, as opposed to just re-signing Clowney. What do you make of that scenario?
I think you got to sign Clowney, and I think they still have a good chance of getting Clowney done. And the reason I say that is because, in the case of the Packers, they signed two linebackers. Linebackers are significantly less, and Clowney knows that because, again, I mean, he had the $15 million franchise tag. And so Zadavian Smith took a little bit below value at 16.8. Preston Smith took about, 14 or 15. And so, but the price of defensive ends are more. I mean, you can see it in the franchise tag, as Frank Clark was 17.2 last year, and you can get about $3 million or $4 million a year more as a defensive end. And so when you look at the landscape of defensive ends, because remember, you only have about 15 teams that play 4-3 defenses, and if you're Clowney, hey, you're a 4-3 defensive end. You don't want to get less and go to a team that is going to be a linebacker. So I'd have to say right now you got a bunch of teams like San Francisco can't afford to do anything. They're going to lose Eric Armstead. Maybe Atlanta, Washington, of course, you can think that maybe they could be in the mix now that they're switching to a 4-3, but they'll probably end up getting Chase Young. So I think that the market's a little more limited for Clowney to a point where I think, you're going to be battling maybe Atlanta. You're not going to be battling Jacksonville because they're putting the franchise tag on Yannick. And so I think that they still have a decent chance to do it. It just has to be at the right price.
Here's the deal, John. I mean, if Clowney is going to stick by his "I'm not going to play for a trash team" policy going forward, well, some of the other alternatives are an Indianapolis Colts team with a lot of cap space and Jacoby Brissett, the Cowboys, who got to figure out Dak Prescott and Amari Cooper's contracts, the Texans, which it would just be hilarious if he ended up going back there, and then after that, you have the Titans, who have to figure out Ryan Tannehill and Derrick Henry, and then maybe the Philadelphia Eagles, who have about $40 million in cap space. And that would be really interesting, too, if you were to go back to Philadelphia. There aren't a lot of contenders that can really afford to pay him.
No, and of course, I mean, you bring up the Titans, they're a 3-4 defense. So I don't necessarily think they're going to be in the mix because, again, you're going to make much less if you're going to be paid as a linebacker. All right, Indy, that could be a possibility because they do have the cap room to be able to do it. But also, they have a little bit of expense out there. Atlanta, I think, could be a possibility. Philadelphia, remember, they're paying big money for Brandon Graham, and they don't really have as much money as you really think. I know it's $40 million right now, but, I can't see Philly being able to afford it. So, it's because, again, can you pay two defensive ends in the neighborhood of, $18 to $21 million?
No,
you can't.
No, you can't. John, running back roulette. The Cardinals, are they going to release David Johnson, as I've read?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, unless they try to get somebody to pick up a trade and to give him some salary. So I think they'll end up cutting David Johnson. I agree.
And Tennessee is considering on giving Derrick Henry a David Johnson-like contract, which means 2 years from now, they might be trying to dump him too.
Well, they got to get him signed first. It's like,
what if they just skipped that step, though, and just decided we don't need to sign the running back because just 2 years from now we'll talk about having to give the running back away because the contract. I guess I'm trying to say that maybe it's a bad idea to sign running backs to big contracts.
No, it's not necessarily the best, but again, what's your alternative? I mean, if your personality is to run the football and you have the running back that's the personality of your team, and remember, Henry isn't going to take a David Johnson-type deal. He wants more than Ezekiel Elliott.
I know.
And so that's where a problem's going to be. I mean, ultimately, the best solution is just franchise him because at least you have him for 1 year. Maybe you franchise him for 2 years. And, I mean, you get him for a little bit less. He's not going to be happy. He'll miss training camp and all those different things. But at least you still keep him. And then you don't have to worry, you know, 2-3 years down the line. It's like, boy, this isn't working out.
As long as you have him for Derek Sember, you're fine. But there's another option.
That's not a thing either.
It is a thing. He plays best in December. Stop trying to stop my things, Danny. We're going to bring Fetch back too today.
He's trying to call Brady Henderson Hendo.
Hendo. It's perfect.
Hendo?
Hendo, yeah. Hendo doesn't work.
Clayton loves
no,
not
doesn't
here.
Work, no.
No, that's right, John. Stand strong. Stand tall in the pocket against this foolishness.
That doesn't work.
It does. And hey, guess what? You know what doesn't work? The Rams contract for Todd Gurley, which is another one. I mean, I saw a rumor that the Rams are trying to trade Gurley's contract, John, which also seems insane because who would want to take that on?
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, because I think there's very little chance that they can get something done in that regard. Because again, the knee's still not good. I mean, he's really in a position where with that arthritic knee, I mean, you start to think he's more at the end than the beginning. So no, I can't see that at all.
Yeah,
they're just gonna have to probably cut him.
They won't cut Gurley right now, though, will they?
Not right now, no.
You'd probably give him another year. It's tough to watch that and to think as you see teams that are trying to gauge similar investments at running back, it's such a disposable position. But Seattle will find itself in this contrast maybe as soon as this year with Chris Carson.
Mm-hmm.
When the running back's the personality of your team, there is some importance. Like, you can't just say, hey, we're going to ride you for the 3 to 4 years of your rookie contract and then get rid of you, because players will look at it and, well, I'm just getting used up here and I don't get the reward at the end of it for all of the value that I give you.
No, that's true, and but that's where it comes down. You have to make decisions, and you have to either say, okay, we can afford to do this, and we can't. I mean, you know, you have to pay the, because, you know, think about you got Chris Carson that's going to be now able to start negotiating. You've got Shaquille Griffin, and that's going to be, you know, $13 or $14 million a year, somewhere in that range, because now he's at that Pro Bowl type level, having been going to the Pro Bowl. So you got to try to do that. That's why it's funny when you say, well, this team has $57 million of cap room. They got plenty of cap room, but it eats up fast when you start talking, you know, double-digit type of deals.
No two injuries are the same, and I was curious when you brought up Chris Carson, John, about how optimistic or maybe pessimistic you are about his chances this coming year, because when I hear hip injury, I get a little bit nervous, mm-hmm. And I also look at Lano Hill when he came back from a hip injury this season, and we didn't really see the same player. What kind of Chris Carson do you think we'll see this coming season?
Hard to say, because, you know, it depends on how quickly. Now, Lano Hill had to have the surgery, and the fact that Chris didn't have the surgery, that gives a little bit of optimism in the standpoint it's going to take a little less time. But, I mean, Hill basically had very little time in training camp. So I guess the hope would have to be that sometime, you know, in the middle of the OTAs, he can start to do some things and do it. But you just don't know, because, again, that if it's a hip, it's going to be tight. But, again, you know, guys have come back from hip injuries and done well.
Professor, your databases, all your salary calculations, they're invaluable this time of year.
Oh, I love it. I mean, it's working on it every day.
We appreciate you joining us, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Thanks, okay, John.
Thanks.
That is the professor. We did mention Brady Henderson at ESPN.com. Yeah. He's going to join us. Usually, he lives on a boat, but he's about to take a plane. He stops in the middle of transit to talk to us about his prediction regarding Jadeveon Clowney. You'll want to hear that next on Danny and Gallant.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
It's Danny and Gallant, and joining us on the Zeke's Pizza Hotline, I'm disappointed it's not from your boat, but apparently you've upgraded your travel mechanisms, because Brady Henderson of ESPN.com is talking to us, I believe, from an airport.
That's right. I'm in the Delta Sky Lounge at SeaTac on my way to Columbia with a couple buddies of mine. So you guys caught me at just the perfect time.
Yes, it's great, and especially to get you before you went to Columbia, because we're not sure you guys all are going to be making it back. But Brady, on ESPN.com, I read this morning and that you don't think the Seahawks are going to re-sign Jadeveon Clowney, and I panicked. So I decided that we needed to talk to you ASAP. What the hell are you talking about?
Yeah, well, you know, they asked us to make a prediction, and you know, I don't think anybody really knows right now, a month away from free agency, what's going to happen. And they're all just guesses right now, and that's my guess based on the fact that, you know, Clowney is going to free agency. You know, if the Seahawks don't have the tag to keep him from getting there, or to, you know, use the tag as leverage to get him to take a, you know, a deal. And so he's going to get to free agency. And as we all know, when guys get there, the price has the potential to skyrocket when every team can bid on him. And, you know, I think even though he's coming off a season where he only had 2 sacks, he's still got a ton of pressure. He's still a, you know, a marquee name. And I think that, you know, if he commands, you know, something in the neighborhood of, Khalil Mack got a couple of years ago, then if you're the Seahawks, you have to say, okay, yeah, we need this guy, but we also need more, because you saw that their pass rush was pretty ineffective with him. And so if it's just him, that's not going to be enough. And if he, you know, gets that top of the market deal, are you going to have enough to get somebody else? So I think in an ideal scenario, you know, that all assumes that he is going to get one of those massive deals. An ideal scenario for the Seahawks would be maybe if the market isn't there and it's something like $17, $18 million, then I think you would have enough to get Clowney and somebody else. But the bottom line is, I think you need more than one guy.
The advantageous thing is, he said he doesn't want to play for any trash team. And what helps out on that front, though, is the Seahawks are one of only a few, I think, legitimate Super Bowl contenders that have a lot of cap space to work with. Do you think that the pot could get so sweet that he actually decides to sign with a bum team?
Maybe. And you know, I remember I was standing right near him when he said that. I could just imagine his agent sort of tensing up and saying, no, stop saying that. I mean, you know, here's what I'll say on that. I think that, you know, a team like, you know, say just throw a team like Indianapolis out there, a team that wasn't very good, but maybe they could convince him. Maybe they could throw a lot of money at him and convince them that, hey, got a lot of money to spend, got a decent quarterback. I think that, you know, a team could, you know, convince him that maybe if they weren't a contender last year, that they could be a contender this year by spending a lot of money. And so when I heard that, I thought, okay, you know, that might rule out the Miami Dolphins of the world and really the worst of the bad NFL teams. But maybe not every team that wasn't in the playoffs last year necessarily.
We're talking to Brady Henderson of ESPN.com. And Brady, the one thing that I thought made a ton of sense about your prediction is just a year ago, Seattle passed on paying Frank Clark more than $20 million a year. There is a limit on what they're willing to pay for a single pass rusher. Do you think they'll value Clowney more than they valued Frank Clark?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And it does make you, I think you got to maybe assume that some of that was with Clark was maybe less about the on-field production and more about, hey, do we trust this guy to give this guy, what, $60 million in guaranteed money, whatever it was that he got from Kansas City? Because let's face it, Clark has been the more productive player, you know, guy who, was a double digit sack guy right around there for the last 4 years. So, that's a good question. And I'm not really sure. I just think that, if it's going to be in that Frank Clark, you know, territory, that DeMarcus Lawrence territory, are you better off just spending that money on two guys and spending maybe a little bit more on two guys like the Green Bay Packers did last year? Preston Smith, Za'Darius Smith, both, you know, in terms of average, right around $30 million combined for the two of those guys. And they got a combined 25 and a half sacks in the regular season. By the way, 4 more in the playoffs of Russell Wilson. Preston Smith had that killer sack on third down that really, helped put the game away for Green Bay.
Clowney fell into their lap at the end of this past offseason. But at the very least, going into the year, you thought Ziggy Ansah might be able to bring you something. And also, you thought Jaron Reed, after the 6-game suspension, would actually be able to contribute. Right now, though, it doesn't seem like they really have a backup plan. And I almost wonder if, because of that, they decide, yeah, we kind of have to overpay Clowney.
Yeah, maybe. And Jaron Reed, that's going to be an interesting one. You know, I wonder if the fact that he's coming off a suspension and the nature of that suspension, if that's going to hurt him. And maybe you can get him back, and maybe with another year, maybe if you pair him with Clowney, another year, maybe that works out better than it did. You know, I was talking with somebody who was, you know, knows X's and O's a lot better than I do. He made a good point that, you know, so much of interior pressure, right, defensive tackles, getting pressure. It's so much about, you know, them sort of working in cohesion with the defensive end. And, you know, those guys will call it games. And, you know, it's the defensive tackle goes outside, the end goes inside. And there's a lot of chemistry, a lot of timing involved there. And I don't think Jaron Reed had that with Clowney last year because, you know, remember Clowney came in right before the start of the season and then he, you know, and then Reed missed the first six games. So maybe the market isn't there for Reed because of the year he's coming off of, and maybe you can get him back. And maybe he, you know, with a full season has a better year, more like 2018 than 2019. But again, there's a lot of maybes there, and that's kind of the way it is when you're looking at things in, you know, early February.
Talking to Brady Henderson, ESPN.com. He's with us on the Zeke's Pizza Hotline. Do you expect Seattle to be aggressive in free agency, Brady?
You know what? I'm can sort of go back and forth on that because for the last 5 or 6 years, they really have not spent a ton of money on a single guy. And I guess, you know, you could say maybe Clowney was, you know, that was a trade thing, so it wasn't technically free agency. But even him, you know, they got him at a discounted rate because they got Houston to pay for, you know, about half that salary. And, you know, it's been the Bradley McDougal type guys, DJ Fluker, Mike Iupati, you know, kind of veteran guys on short-term deals that are nowhere near the top of the market. So I'm inclined to say no, just because recently that's been their MO, but they haven't really had this much money to spend, and they haven't had the needs that they have with, you know, needing to get two pass rushers, I think. So I could see them being more aggressive than they have been in years past, for sure.
How much do you think last year maybe affects their decision to be more aggressive, seeing as they were 11-5, which I think probably surprised maybe even themselves a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, that season is so funny to me because on one hand, you know, they were maybe an inch or two away from getting that stop on third down and giving the ball back to one of the best, you know, late game quarterbacks in the NFL. And you're talking about, you know, maybe going to the NFC Championship game. But then you look at the fact that they have they won all those one score games. You know, I think it was an NFL record. I think it was 10 victories by 8 points or fewer. And so you wonder if maybe they were punching above their weight a little bit. So, but I think the fact of the matter is you've got one of the best quarterbacks on the planet, Russell Wilson, and you've got enough pieces around him, I think, or, you know, to be a legitimate Super Bowl contender. And so, yeah, my answer to that would be why not? I think, you know, you're always going to have a chance with Russell Wilson, and once you've got money to spend like they've got this offseason, there's no reason not to.
He is Brady Henderson, covers the Seahawks for ESPN.com. Brady, you need to be safe in Columbia because we need you back covering the team. We can't afford to have any replacements or somebody to come in there. We appreciate you joining us this morning. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you got it. I'm traveling with my friend named Poop Dog, and as you can imagine, with a guy nicknamed Poop Dog, you never know if he's going to make it back. But I will try my best to make it back.
Brady, thank you very much.
Thanks, Brady.
Yeah, you got it.
What he says makes a lot of sense. I don't know if that's the way things will play out. And honestly, I think there's some uncertainty on the Seahawks part. How much is Clowney going to command? How much is he going to get offered on the open market? That's a variable. How much does he want in order to play for, like, how much salary is he willing to sacrifice in order to play for a really good team? Like, how much is that? Is it $4 million? Like, he's willing to take $4 million less to stay in Seattle? I usually think it's like $1 million. When guys say I'll take a little less to play for a winning team, usually it's $1 million. Those are two questions, and if he's going to command Khalil Mack type money, should Seattle pay it?
I really think they should. I know it's a lot, and it's a guy that doesn't have the numbers, and a lot of people are big into the numbers and not into what they see on the field, but what they see on the field, it is self-explanatory with this guy. So on that front, I am willing to go a little bit extra. You know what he is, and here's the thing that I'm hoping he feels. First off, he has been in situations with bad quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. I mean, think about all those bad quarterbacks over the early years of the Bill O'Brien era in Houston. But this is more important. He is in a place where he is accepted, and he is not randomly questioned for things that honestly make no sense. And that's what Bill O'Brien did, and that's what Mike Vrabel did, and that's what the Texans coaching staff, for whatever reason, did. I hope that that is a strong pull for the Seahawks, in addition to having Russell Wilson, in terms of keeping him here and maybe making things a little bit cheaper. But it's going to be difficult.
We're going to ask Brock Huert about Jadeveon Clowney, as well as his future as an XFL sideline reporter. Not Clowney, Brock Huert. But next, I thought I was done laughing at Jimmy Garoppolo. Turns out I was wrong. There's still more to laugh about. That's coming up next.
You are listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
This is Danny and Gallant. It's interesting. Brady Henderson's scenario, we're going to be talking about that a lot today, in which he predicts the Seahawks won't end up re-signing Jadeveon Clowney. The price is going to get too high, and Seattle's going to decide it's better off to add multiple pass rushers than pay the premium it will take to get him back. And that's one possible scenario of this. I thought I was done laughing at Jimmy Garoppolo, though. Like, I thought I'd juiced every bit of satisfaction. I thought I'd taken that lemon and drawn every bit of sourness and turned it into as much delicious lemonade, and it wasn't going to be as much fun. And then I was listening to one of my favorite media personalities. I love Bomani Jones from ESPN.com. Or I guess it's just straight out ESPN. High Noon. He has a podcast called The Right Time. And as I was listening to it yesterday, I started listening because of some of his thoughts on Jay-Z. What it turned out is he had a fantastic take that I am incredibly jealous of, that I did not plant my flag much firmer when it came to my perceptions of Jimmy Garoppolo's abilities, because Bomani took it a step farther and really actually... He invoked the name Tebow when talking about the Jimmy Garoppolo phenomenon.
Right, because that was the whole thing about Tebow. Tebow's terrible. Yeah, but he's magic. You know, every explanation that people had for the madness that was going on in 2011, it all came back to, but he's magic. But it was just magic. There was no explanation to it, right? Just like, oh, there's something about him. And I was getting driven crazy and had people try to tell me, but he's good. Why? Because they won. And nothing, I repeat, nothing infuriates me more than the idea that he's good because they won. That's it. The idea that a quarterback wins a game. And y'all did that same damn thing with Jimmy Garoppolo. Y'all did that whole same damn thing with him, right? Like, yo, man, Jimmy ain't really good.
The thing with
But he had a good game against the Saints, and they've been winning. I'm telling you, man, Jimmy ain't really good.
The dramatic pause. I thought it was time. He kept on going.
He's got a few of those.
Bomani's fantastic. My thing with Tebow, my pause with Tebow, you call someone Tebow, that's about as disrespectful as it gets.
Yes.
That's basically saying, hey, quarterback, you don't have any arms, so your thoughts on that. But the thing is with Tebow in that year, it wasn't just that he was winning. Divine things were happening in that season. I mean, there are random fumbles that were taking place from random Chicago Bear running backs that should have stepped out of bounds. Onside kicks were being recovered. All sorts of crazy, wonky stuff happened in that season.
And it was attributed to Tebow.
Right. Like, he was saying, bring it down! Bring it down! Help me out! Looking up
Magic.
To the heavens.
Magic!
Magic. Right. It could have been that. Now, I think, though, the comparison is apt from this perspective. Bomani's right in that, what is it that sets Garoppolo apart? And here's the one thing that I will say. The guy gets the ball out really quickly, and his arm moves really fast when he throws the football. But, I mean...
What happened in the Super Bowl? What happened in the Super Bowl?
The ball got out really quickly. The problem is he just didn't see a lot of open wide receivers. And if you saw the replay, someone compiled a bunch of George Kittle showing really bad body language, being wide open, and Jimmy Garoppolo not seeing him.
They pointed it out on the broadcast.
Right.
And Troy Aikman basically said, I have no idea why Jimmy Garoppolo didn't throw the ball to Kittle there. They got what they wanted, and he didn't throw the ball, and you can see Kittle surprised that he didn't get the ball.
Yep.
But for all of the missed throws, the ones that stick out were specifically the interception, which I didn't realize this.
I didn't either.
Jimmy Garoppolo had his eyes closed. When he released the ball,
so
there are
bad.
Pictures of it. His eyes are closed.
What'd you think, by the way, of that interception he threw with his eyes closed?
I knew you were going to get to that. I knew you were. You know what? At the time, it seemed particularly egregious. And then when you saw the videotape, like the run back, the highlight, I was like, damn, he really did have his eyes closed. I mean, the idea that he had was like, all right, I'm going to quickly try and rope this out of bounds. But he clearly didn't put enough mustard on it.
Let me tell you what idea he had. This is what his idea sounded like. Oh, no! That was his idea. Somebody get this ball out of my hand!
Quickly. Because he gets it out really, really, really quickly. Here's the thing. How is this not a bigger deal? He threw an interception with his eyes closed in a Super Bowl?
Just flung it. He's trying to get it out of bounds. Like,
I don't know how.
Oh, no!
I don't know how I didn't notice it happen either.
Well, it happened quick. He gets rid of the ball really fast.
He's got to put a visor on now going forward.
Oh, no!
Polarize, though, so no one sees your terrified throws.
You combine that with the 4th-and-10 play where he's in the grasp and he just does the two-handed chest heave out just two-handed.
That's much more
here.
Oh no.
Yeah, and then, I mean, it all adds up to Bomani Jones taking a victory lap because he's told everybody that Jimmy's not that good. Jimmy shows in the Super Bowl that, in fact, he wasn't that good. And let's pause for all the Jimmy's watching all the video of the game to draw inspiration and fuel to motivate him for next year and just realize that Bomani was right.
And I feel bad because I wind up being the cat going all extra hard on it, and I'm sure it appears to some of y'all that I got some kind of beef with young James, and I got no beef with James. I got no beef with James whatsoever. He's the American dream, right? Not as good as his salary indicates. That's what I want to be. I always want to get paid like I'm better than I am. So, like, good for Jimmy.
I like that he's calling him James.
That's amazing. He's on our same thing, James Richard.
Yeah, James Richard. James Richard is not as good as his salary would indicate. There's a whole list of quarterbacks that are on there.
You know what, Danny? I'm with you in that. It's still enjoyable.
Oh, it's hilarious.
I mean, look, this offseason, it's going to be a long one, and we do have Seattle Dragons football coming to us this weekend, so there will be some sort of football to hold us over. But I think reveling in the – what's the opposite of a parade? Because the Super Bowl parade for the Chiefs just took place.
Schadenfreude?
Yes. The Super Bowl Schadenfreude of the San Francisco 49ers is fantastic. I mean, I saw yesterday, Danny, like three headlines. Jimmy Garoppolo, we're going to use this loss as fuel.
It's all they can say.
Emmanuel Sanders saying, watching the film back, it's like watching the Titanic and hoping the ship doesn't sink this time.
It's great. It's absolutely fantastic.
So does Richard have to come here and do a one-man opposite of a parade?
Shame.
Then?
Shame.
Walk of shame.
Shame.
Ding, ding,
shame.
Ding.
Shame. Ding, ding, ding. And while he does that, we're just going to have footage of Sammy Watkins running around. Just Sammy Watkins on a perpetual loop circling him, being able to lap him. Yeah, no, it turns out I'm not done at all laughing about that. Thinking about what a San Francisco 49er fan does, where they've got this quarterback who's extremely good looking, who comes from the most successful franchise over the past 20 years, and you get him, and he doesn't do anything bad. But people ask you, like, are he's good? Of course he's good. And then you just sit there and watch that sort of, we think he's pretty good. You watch that fracture in front of you. Like, watching a fan base question their own quarterback is awesome. Like, it's absolutely, it's not quite as good as finding your own quarterback, but it's like 1B. If 1A is when you get to know that you got your quarterback and you're like, all right, let's go, it's time. 1B is watching when your top rival kind of looks at it and goes, eh, that's it?
And when you've had him for a while and the questions start, you know the answer. That's, I think, the worst part for the 49ers right now. Because for me, and I feel bad now, last week saying, you know what, maybe Jimmy G deserves a little bit more respect. Because I'm trapped in 2015, still thinking that Jimmy Garoppolo is someone who filled in for Tom Brady, did very well. Somebody that also, on top of that, was very well thought of by Bill Belichick. I wonder what Belichick's thinking watching all of this right now.
Oh, no! Oh, no! It's Danny and Gallant. We got Brock Heward coming up next.